Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Dr. Melinda Brennan, Executive Director of the ACLU of Wisconsin, for being with us for the past half hour. If you missed that discussion, don't worry. You can always catch it in our podcasted updates of each day's live shows. You can check those out at civicmedia.us/shows or wherever you get your podcasts from. Right now, we've got Professor Lowell Barrington, Professor of Political Science with Marquette University, joining us to give us an update on the Ukraine-Russia peace talks. Maybe air quotes around that, I'm not sure. Welcome back, Professor Barrington. Again, you're on the road. Thanks so much for making time for us. Let's start with a little bit of detail here. President Trump seemed to indicate on Monday, yesterday, that the U.S. would consider sending ground troops, and then he clarified in a Fox interview that he would not do that, using the language, "You have my assurance that we will not be sending troops to Ukraine." Where do things stand coming out of the Friday bending of the knee of Vladimir Putin and yesterday's meeting between Donald Trump, Zelensky, and numerous European leaders?
Yeah, hi, Maggie. It's great to be with you again. This is a really important question. I think that both things can be true, that we have some reasons to be concerned about what appears to maybe be flip-flopping, but also that I think there's some real positives out of yesterday. So it's kind of both the, so much better than Friday department and the let's not get too optimistic about this yet department, I think, at the same time here. But in terms of the specific situation, I think that no one really in the European delegation or Zelensky really thought we'd be putting U.S. troops on the ground. I think the really important piece of this was a strong and public statement from President Trump that the U.S. is going to support a security arrangement for Ukraine that's real, and that the U.S. would be backing that sort of in one form or another. And, on the list of concerns is the question of, will that, be the real policy? Will we get a change in that, down the road here? I don't know. But I will say Keir Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, said there really was progress made and others agreed on the security guarantees kind of provision here. So I think that there is reason to come out with some optimism, certainly compared to where we were on Friday.
And, we hear the term security guarantees frequently, right? And the point is, what does that actually mean? And are we talking about something that looks like Article 5 in the NATO alliance, but isn't technically NATO? Is that what it's sounding like this is looking like from your best take, Professor? Or what do these security guarantees, what's sort of the panoply of options or the range of options that are out there?
Right. I think starting from the European side, I think we heard a lot from the European leaders who assembled yesterday. I'm happy to talk about that process today as well. It was a really remarkable coming together for this meeting. But the Europeans were really pushing that idea, including with President Trump, that what we really want is, if Ukraine is not a NATO member, they need to at least essentially have that guarantee that NATO would defend them if they were attacked again. Not only did President Trump not go there, I think that he was at times kind of channeling that conversation on Friday with Putin, and he mentioned Putin a number of times yesterday. I think he's not comfortable with that. So it'll be something on the U.S. side, at least for now, something short of that. But the real question is also, what is Putin going to accept or allow as part of any deal? And would he even accept the idea of European peacekeeping troops in Ukraine? Because I would find that very difficult to believe that he would be jumping. In fact, they have NATO countries putting troops in Ukraine. That would seem to be something that would be a pretty big red line for him.
Fascinating moment we find ourselves in. I wanted to play a little sound from Donald Trump talking about the U.S. involvement in some of these security measures. Let's take cut 11. I want to get your reaction to this, Professor.
Your team has talked about security guarantees. Could that involve U.S. troops? Would you rule that out in the future?
We'll let you know that maybe later today. We're meeting with 7 great leaders of great countries also. And we'll be talking about that. They'll all be involved, but there'll be a lot of there'll be a lot of help. When it comes to security, there's going to be a lot of help. It's going to be good. They are a first line of defense because they're there. They're Europe. But we're going to help them out also. We'll be involved.
And Professor Barrington, this is my particular question. We've been talking about that statement by President Trump, which set off all of the speculation about, does he mean troops on the ground? He clarifies in a Fox interview, no, I don't. These security guarantees, here's my question to you. We've talked about the range that they could include. Donald Trump's imprecision when he talks about these things is one of the things that greatly concerns me when some of the folks sitting on the other side of the table are such vastly more experienced operators, meaning Putin and the folks that were in Anchorage with him last Friday. Do you think, does Donald Trump actually have a mastery of what's going on here? Because he's so imprecise when he talks about things. I have long thought that when people are extraordinarily vague or speak in generalities, they don't typically understand the thing that they're talking about because they're not discussing it with precision. Sometimes vagueness is diplomatically necessary, but I'm not catching that vibe here. It seems like he doesn't quite grasp it. Now, I'll just point you to an example of this. It's been reported that Zelensky and Europeans likened the territorial concession of the Donetsk region to Trump, like the U.S. would be giving away parts of Florida and eastern Florida, which is where Mar-a-Lago is, to Cuba or to another foreign power. And Trump seemed to, finally he understood things. Does our president actually have a grasp of these matters? Do his advisors?
I think that there are advisors around him that are actually pretty well versed in both the strategy of diplomacy and how it's a little bit different from making business deals, but also with the details of this. I mean, the details have never been Trump's strength. He in his first right. term, famously just, wouldn't even look at the intelligence reports, the kind of daily briefing things, because why would he be bothered with those kinds of details? If there's a problem, just tell him there's a problem. And I think that's where he is on this in some ways. It's why I think he thought that, things could get solved really quickly or done in a day or whatever once they sat down. So, yes, I think it's fair to say he doesn't care to really dig into the details of these things. I don't think that's the end of the world to a certain extent, in that peace deals take time and they take a lot of lower level negotiations on the details, right? I mean, the people three levels down that are really hammering out a lot of things on the two sides. So I'm less concerned about that than I am about what we kind of talked about last time, which is that there's not really a sort of ideological or philosophical anchor for him on these kinds mm-hmm. of questions. And it's why he can say something and not realize the implication of it or flip-flop from one day to the next on something. That's a concern, not worrying about details. We've had other presidents who haven't, worried as much about details. So I think some of that is, and we can be concerned if he doesn't have people around him that do. And certainly, as we mentioned on Friday, that this is a kind of far less experienced foreign policy team that Trump brings to the table than Russia does, or that even a lot of the European leaders do. But in this case, it's really, do we know he'll follow through on these or not? I think that's the right. That's the main concern. Next time he talks to Putin, will he suddenly have a different position on these things?
We've been talking about territorial concessions on this show a lot. We talked about it with you last week. I talked about it extensively with my guest yesterday, and we've gotten a lot of listener feedback, I think unsurprisingly, about that. And to sort of summarize it, I'm going to use Olivia Troy. She has a Substack. She used to be in the intelligence community in the Trump administration. Right. She then worked in the office of the vice president. But what she said was this in her Substack yesterday: floating land for peace isn't tough talk. It may be dangerous. By putting Donbass or Crimea on the table, Trump undercuts Zelensky's leverage, signals to Putin that U.S. support is negotiable, and splits NATO allies and EU allies into compromisers and defenders. And she warned of long-term normalization of territorial bargaining as a valid element to peace negotiations when one country is clearly the aggressor, as was the case here. I understand that as a practical matter, potentially territorial concessions may be required to end the conflict. My concern has always been about process, that we've sort of blown past the ceasefire because Putin isn't going to give one, and Donald Trump seems to be moving at a very accelerated pace towards territorial concessions, potentially because he's more worried about getting the Nobel Peace Prize than he is about a meaningful and lasting peace in Ukraine, and therefore a meaningful and lasting opposition to Putin's aggression in Western Europe. What are your thoughts on what Ms. Troy had to say and these general considerations or concerns?
Yeah, I think she raises two really important points, and I want to kind of pull it apart from the specific situation here. And I think she's right that for us to dive into that at the moment and lay it out or kind of dangle it as something that we're potentially interested in does weaken Zelensky's position. And so normally what you'd want is, if there are going to be territorial concessions made, it's the decision of the country that's been invaded to decide if that's worth it for them to get peace. Right? It really should be up to them. It shouldn't be forced on them at the early stages of a serious negotiation process. The bigger picture question that she raises, though, is really, really important, which is, again, I've said to you, I think there are some arguments that long-term Ukraine may be more stable if it does give up some of the eastern part of the country and maybe Crimea as well. But that's, again, a domestic political consideration or calculation for Ukraine to make. The international relations piece of this, of normalizing the idea that if you invade a country, you get kind of a slap on the wrist, but you get to keep a bunch of the territory, that's it's very consistent with Putin's view of things and his sort of imperialistic approach that he takes. And there's some thought that to the extent that Trump has an understanding of foreign policy, it's kind of through this imperialism lens, right? Where, you know, former empires would sort of run up against each other. That's where they draw the line. It wasn't really about sovereignty for the people who live there. And so I think that there is some of that, and she has a right to express that as a big concern, because, again, we don't want the end of the Ukraine-Russia war to make someone like Putin think that he ultimately won and this was actually a good thing for his country. We want the outcome of this for an aggressor like that to be a sense of, well, we get a little bit back here, but boy, that was really not worth it, and we should not have done that. And so that's what she's getting at in the norm of what the international community should do here, I think, again, is a really important point not to lose here.
Thanks so much, Professor Lowell Barrington of Marquette University. We'll have him back soon to talk about what it would look like to move hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians if there is such a concession, and what it means that Trump hasn't pushed and stayed firm on his demand for a ceasefire, which was quickly abandoned on Friday. When we come back, we've got some breaking news about AG Pam Bondi's view of states' rights and the 10th Amendment. Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.